Tristan Edis, Business Council for Sustainable Energy. Tom, one of the things that's been driving this debate about whether Australia should look at nuclear, I think, has been, well, I think one of the primary drivers would be greenhouse gas emissions, because we have some of the lowest power generating costs in the world, I think, and we have extensive supplies of coal. Now, you're also a member of the board for the Institute of Public Affairs, and I'm just interested, Tom, to know your views on whether global warming induced through human activities is a reality and is a serious concern for I suppose, the welfare of humanity.
Well, look, it's not my business here to answer those sorts of questions, but I can give you my opinion of this, and it's really based on a very thoughtful report which came from the House of Lords Select Committee on Economics, looking at climate change. And what they essentially concluded can be summarised, I think, in about four statements. One, that there are still uncertainties in the science and the economics, particularly in the calculations of climate change. Secondly, the Kyoto Agreement, as it stands, if it's geared to just a 10% reduction, is not actually accomplishing anything significant for an enormous amount of money if people were to actually hold to it. Thirdly, that the real issue is those who were not in the Kyoto Treaty, which is particularly India and China. The developed world is 800 million people, and they consume, well, the United States is 20% or so of carbon dioxide emissions. From memory, Europe and Japan are about another 20%, and the balance is elsewhere. But what you have is 2.5 billion people in China and India who are going, as I said, who are going through economic development. That is the place where we ought to be trying to do something. And that is the fourth point, which is that we do not have a cheap form of electricity storage, because it's one thing for the sun to shine and the wind to blow, but they don't do it all the time. And, I mean, it's exactly the equivalent of finding a VCR. You want something which transfers the energy from one time slot to another. So I look at all that and think that's actually where the contribution could best be made in this whole process.
But, Tom, in Australia's context, why would we look at nuclear as an alternative if we aren't concerned about greenhouse gas emissions, is the question. And whether, Tom, you think that that's something that we need to even worry about. Does Australia need to worry about our greenhouse gas emissions?
No, in terms of nuclear power, that's a business question. I mean, once the regulation has been laid out so that people can see what they have to do in order to construct a plant, then that's a business decision.
Based on costs.
Based on costs.
And costs, including disposal costs of waste.
Well,
greenhouse might be a disposal cost.
I look at greenhouse and think it comes from exactly the approach that you adopt in drug development, where you have uncertainties in what you see. And you only spend a certain amount of money if something is uncertain by 50%, or something is certain by 70%, you might be happy to spend something. If something is certain by 99%, then you might be prepared to spend a lot of money. I think that at the moment, it's not possible for people to give you a probability for the occurrence of any of the climate change events. And even if there are events, is it better to mitigate against them rather than to try and deal with the issue in terms of perhaps one of the causes of it?
I actually have a question, if we don't have any further ones at the moment. I was reading that the reserves of uranium in the world are about 4 billion tonnes, or 4 million tonnes. Yet the projections for usage are about 40,000 to 80, increasing to 80,000 tonnes a year. So by my arithmetic, we've probably only got 50 or 60 years worth of uranium left at current and projected usage rates. So is it worth going down the uranium path or the nuclear energy path for the sake of 50 or 60 years?
Well, Paul, you enter an honourable tradition in raising those questions because this is Club of Rome. It's interesting. We've been running out of petrol ever since petrol was first used in a massive way in cars. The answer is that there is an abundance of uranium in the crust of the Earth. If there are any limits, then remember that what we're doing at the moment is we are using the isotope 235. It's perfectly possible to then go on, and some countries are doing it in terms of looking at breeder reactors, which turns the other isotope, which is there 99.3% of the time, into a fuel, which would then extend the lifetime of those resources. I think experience, and this is to be found in all sorts of minerals, experience tells you that if you want to go search for it, you'll probably find it. There's also another side to this, which is the march of technology in terms of how you recover it and how you mine it. So if you want some comfort, though, Lord Kelvin, back in 1895, calculated that the Earth was going to run out, or the atmosphere was going to run out of oxygen in 340 years because we were burning so much coal. We are now burning 10 times the amount of coal Lord Kelvin knew about, plus we found a whole lot of other ways of consuming oxygen, and nobody seems to be worried. So it's very, very interesting, a lot of these issues which get raised.
Okay, thank you.
Tom, Ian Head from Rio Tinto. There's been a lot of talk in recent times, recent as in the last 12 or 18 months, since uranium and nuclear power became an agenda item, about the opportunities for further enrichment of uranium in Australia. Did I see up on the slide there that you're talking that we have a demand in the order of 10,000 tonnes a year of enriched uranium and a global capacity of around 60,000 tonnes? And if that's the case, the commentators who are advocating enrichment going against the basic principles of economics?
No, Ian. The demand is matched roughly to the supply in terms of uranium. The 60,000 tonnes refers to the capacity going in to the process, and the 10,000 tonnes of enriched uranium is what comes out. So if demand expands, then supply will surely follow. And my point was, in terms of thinking about whether you can have a greenfield plant in this country, is the competition you face from established producers who can simply add on, if you like, at the margin, extra centrifuges to match up with the capacity. But presumably, if it were done under contract, then it would be perfectly possible to establish an enrichment plant and make money out of it.
Sorry about that. I had to go the long way around. Juliet Health from ANZ Bank. I wanted to ask you a question about the potential sites in Australia for nuclear power generators, and in particular, what our geographic limitations would be. And I'm thinking particularly of access to water.
I'm not sure I've got a coherent answer. I think the 1960s, the old SECV had actually planned to put a reactor on French Island in Western Port Bay. That's the nearest I know, except possibly the Australian government thinking about Jervis Bay as a place. But you have to look at what the extra expenses would be. And if you look at the siting of nuclear power plants in the United States and I guess in Europe, although I'm not as familiar with it, but in general they're embedded into the to the grid systems so that you don't spend an awful lot more in terms of long leads to get you to the demand centres for power. And that's about all I can say on that.
Thanks, Tom. Chris Case from Clayton Utes. I just have a quick question. There was a report released recently by Professor John Guiters, which is titled Introducing Nuclear Power to Australia, an Economic Comparison. I was wondering if you'd read this report and what your general feeling is about it. And if you have read it, one of the scenarios that it proposes is to have a fifth of a kind nuclear reactor of a particular type in Australia. And if that's the case, when do you think that would happen and who's going to build the other four? Thank you.
Well, look, the answer is yes, I am aware of it, and yes, I've read it. And in a sense, it's equivalent to that snapshot view I showed of the Finland assessment of nuclear power. It's very interesting because it makes the point that in terms of people claiming that nuclear power might be 60 or 70 megawatt hours or only $30 per megawatt hour, he shows that in fact all of, and there's something like 12 reports, all of them can be brought into line when you actually look at what interest rates did people have. The other interesting thing is what lifetime do they give to plants. Those who've got very high cost on electricity have short lifetimes on their plants, 15 years or so. Others go out to 40 years. So it's a quite thorough report. Where you start to worry is, well, if you've got to wait for the fifth reactor to be built, who's going to build the other four? Is that are people going to limber up in another country, or how's it to be done? So, I think it's a useful contribution, but only in the general sense of saying, well, the power is the costs are in about the right region for us to have a serious look. But until you have site specific, design specific. By regulations which are not going to be varied, there's not much more you can say.